have to be what?
Twice.
What?
Twice as good.
Twice as good as them to get half of what they have.
Howdy, lovers, listeners, comrades in arms. It is I, Dallas DK Kyle, here to tell you a bedtime story with my good co-host.
No, I'll introduce myself with the kind of energy you're bringing.
It is also MJ Craig, reporting live from New York.
It's actually not that late at night, but one of us decided to take a nap before recording, which I will admit that we are recording on a day that we do not usually record because I had to do work yesterday that I could not move because I was traveling today. And DK was so gracious as to move the recording. What I did not think is that after being like, hey, I'll be good at 8:30, and then being like, okay, cool, call me when you're ready. Call the first time, no answer. And I was like, I know this bitch. I see. So I call again. And she picks up and she says, oh, hello. I was like, she is asleep. Knocked out. It's like slowly starting to wake up. She's like, oh my god, I have missed calls from this person, rubbing her eyes, trying to clear out her ears, patting her chest to get her heart at its awake rhythm. I'll introduce myself. I don't need that. Comrades, listeners, and friends, and lovers. Listen. It's given Delilah 97.1.
It's the quiet storm. And not only that, you know, I'm not going to be very unattended to this episode, but ladies, it's that time of the month where I'm fighting for my life. I am going to the mat with Mother Nature, and she is beating my ass. I'm fighting all my life. I had to fight. Mother Nature will not let my ass go. So yes, I decided to take a little nap. And who knew that a little nap would turn on to full slumber. But when you're fighting for your life, you know that a nap can turn into full-on slumber very quickly. So here we are.
I, on the other hand, am throwing back a Red Bull. So after this, I can go get some more work done.
But I'm gonna give you the best that I got. And
how are you otherwise, DK? Switch it up.
I'm doing good. You know, I want to give just a shout out to all the working girlies. Those of you who have to work, those of you who choose to work, those of you who find fulfillment in waking up. Yes. I know that these days, under this current administration, work is not the best. I had a conversation with a friend who was talking about work and just having some of the challenges that they're having on their job. I know that there are times where I have to be in deep prayer on my job. So I just want to give a shout out to all the working girlies as we close out this month of Women's History Month, that if you have to get up every morning, hop in the shower, throw on your best pair of Spanx, thongs, bloomers, briefs, whatever you like to wear, and march out that door to make a dollar, this episode is for you.
A single mom who works two jobs, who loves her kids and never stops. Gentle hand, heart of a fighter. I'm a survivor.
Boy, she ate that song up. She ate that
song. Reba, here's your one chance, fans, and don't let me down.
Reba, very much the Mary J. Blige of country music. Like,
because you could tell if she had on some thigh-high boots, she'd be stomping. Hell, you could see it.
Doing her thing. Loved the Reba Show as a kid. Absolutely loved it. But how are you doing in your possible, like, new home?
Let's hear it for New York. Okay, I'm not gonna lie. I love it. Obviously, it's like less than 24 hours, and I am like a little delirious. Luckily, I'm not gonna be at the office tomorrow until like 11. So I am gonna go try to find a little local coffee shop. I found a place that's walking distance, because, you know, that's how we do in the city. So I'm gonna walk over and work there for like 2 hours and then come back. But I love it. Excuse me, not gonna lie, I hate tourists, and I don't hate tourism. Tourism is great. When I have a suitcase, a tote bag, my purse, and a bag containing food, a couple with their child who wants to hold both mommy and daddy's hand, but you're taking up the entire sidewalk and I need to get through, your kid's gonna learn new words. I'm about to expand your baby's vocabulary if you don't get the fuck out of my way. So it was a lot of that, especially because of where the office is located. I think I sent you a photo. It's in a very photogenic area. But I love it. And I'm so excited. I definitely feel like I want to live in Manhattan, but like, this just made me, I think I have to come back here next week. But it just made me so excited to be. And like, get to experience this every day.
I'm dying inside.
So,
I'm physically withering away.
I'm so sorry. I'm just like as I was carrying my suitcase and tote and like everything up and downstairs for the subway, I was like, okay, lesson learned here is that when you come back, you're gonna fly. When you are like coming for your Airbnb stay in like 2 weeks before you find an apartment. But I was just like, this is everything that I wanted it to be.
I'm glad that New York is proving to be everything that you want it to be. Though a knife is in my heart.
This is where dreams are made of.
Hey now. Because you are moving to one of the fashion capitals of the world, We are going to take this time to dive into our next segment. And I'm going to hand it over to you just to set up this segment. So, ladies and gentlemen, open your textbooks/Bibles. We'll be in two different books this year. This episode will be in Madam Secretary. And, of course, everybody's favorite, The West Wing. MJ, take it away. Rage, money,
power. Okay. So, I want to start by talking about Madam Secretary, which is one of my favorite political TV shows.
really good.
One, Elizabeth McCord, played by Taya Leone. Fucking amazing. Two, the family life, the dynamics. Also, like, very, like, wealthy white people family. Love it. Marries a blue-collar guy. Literally marries the son of a union worker. Love it. Like, their relationship, the couple, the family, and then how they portray the Secretary of State's role and the relationship that a Secretary of State can have with a president. Throughout the series, Madeleine Albright is on an episode. Morgan Freeman plays the Supreme Court Chief Justice. Like, that show is so good. It's one of my, again, I probably binge it on Netflix like 4 or 5 times. That said, one of the running themes of the show, which actually first shows itself, I believe, in like episode 2, is that Elizabeth was a CIA analyst who then left the CIA to become a professor before getting recruited to become Secretary of State after the current Secretary of State dies. She has never been a fashionable, like, fashion has never been her aim, right? Like, slacks and a shirt, slacks and a blouse has been her style. And one of the running tropes of the show is that, like, whether it's the White House or her daughter who gets into fashion, or, like, when she's hosting parties, people are always trying to push a stylist on her. And she's like, I don't need a stylist. I'm here for policy. I'm not here to be decorative. But then it's also very concerned about how she looks. And it's like, Henry, how do I look in this? Do I look fat? That's one. Then you have the West Wing, which I'm sure in the future we'll do so many West Wing episodes because there's so many good ones. But there, DK, you might have to look up like the specific episode and season. But there is an episode where they are doing a state's dinner. I believe it's in the first 2 seasons. And a bunch of reporters who usually are not in the White House, so People, Style, Cosmo, are now in the White House for this one particular week. And it drives CJ insane. Because for 1 week of the year, or like whenever they do these big state dinners, half of the reporters coming at her are like, excuse me, CJ, what's the first lady wearing tonight? Which is obviously very different than like, excuse me, CJ, can you explain why the president took the stance he did on foreign policy in the Middle East? So fashion in politics, and also fashion as a marker of where the country is, I think are both really important. We see how first ladies and princesses and political figures have been able to like shape and mold and change fashion. I think we also see that there are times where changes to fashion, whether on the runways or from brand, show a cultural shift that they are trying to corner the market on. So I will say that to start off, but fashion is actually your wheelhouse. So I'm going to turn it over to you.
Oh, thank you. You can really tell I'm fighting for my life. This is such a different approach to shows.
You are. I'm like, yes. Go get a Red Bull, bitch.
I probably should have got one. Yes. So I think I'll just start by talking about really quickly my love of fashion. The women on my dad's side, it's a pretty matriarchal family. I can literally count on one hand how many men there actually are in our family. And they are literally the sons of the women in our family. And all of the women are like in their heyday were the ultimate divas, like hair, nails, makeup, clothes, giving it to you. On my mom's side, the same thing. Just hair, nails. My mom often tells a story about my great grandmother that my great grandmother would never leave the house without her makeup done. Like, face must be beat. Like, what are we doing? You know, we might be poor, but we're not ugly. Like, we can find something to wear. So I've always just had, and I think that, you know, fashion makes a statement. It can make a political statement. It can make any kind of statement you really want it to make. It really tells you, it really gives people a clue into who you are. While I don't think looks are a defining feature, they definitely do make an impression. So I definitely do think it's important that, you know, just life tip, put your best foot forward. But those two episodes, the one with Madam Secretary with Elizabeth McCord and the First Lady and CJ and the outfit, I think that is just, those two are very pivotal. One, because you see Elizabeth McCord from a statesman's perspective, right? So women in a position of leadership or a position of power, slightly different from the First Lady perspective, because we're looking at a woman in what many would see is a male-dominated perspective. One of the things that I really liked about Madam Secretary is that there was a balance. You often saw Elizabeth McCord in pantsuits, which very... Mm-hmm. Which leaned on the very Hillary Clinton tropes. You could tell there were a lot of like Hillary Clinton references in the
both
character.
Pantsuits, and she would do a tie, but she would wear it almost like a skinny scarf where it would be inside her blouse, which I actually have followed that fashion trend and will do a skinny scarf tie look. If I have a meeting that's like semi-formal, because it looks so
good. I see you.
It's a vibe.
And they often had her in like really nice pencil skirts. So she was actually in pencil skirts quite often. I was actually surprised at how often they would have her in a skirt and a dress. So that was really interesting. And then of course, First Lady Bartlett was that girl in the West Wing. When you see her character more consistently on the show, definitely I think after the first season, second season, you see her more, and definitely by like third, fourth, fifth, like she's mm-hmm. a main character in the season, which is interesting because if you know anything about the West Wing, her character was only supposed to make the one appearance, but they apparently loved her.
People loved her
so much. They were like, bring her back. So I definitely, and then CJ, who I'll just nod to, give her a quick nod, because the actress who plays CJ, I can't think
Allison
of her last
Janney.
Name. Thank you. I knew her first name. I couldn't think of her last name. Is very tall, thin, very model-esque physique. Mm. So I often found it interesting, especially for like the late 90s, early 2000s, how they dressed her character. I think they did an excellent job on formal wear, because her body looked stunning in all of the formal wear costumes. I was never a big fan of her workwear. I thought they could have done a better job, but I think it was just a sign of the times.
I was going to say, I actually think they did a good job of both showing the side of the times and the fact that, like, she probably didn't make enough to be able to tailor those suits the way that she would have needed to for her height.
Yes.
Like, the style was also a little boxier, but if she had to tailor every suit for her height and have it fit exactly how she would want it to, the show would not no longer be realistic, because, like, press secretaries aren't making enough money to do that and afford to live in D.C. and have all the other things that she had.
Yes. It is important to note, and I don't want to veer off topic too much, that everyone on staff had a high-powered position, except with the exception of Toby. Like, Sam was working in Big Law. We found him. Oh, and Josh. I would say Josh and Toby probably were
the... Oh, you mean before they... Yeah. Like, before they started.
Yes. Like, she was working in Hollywood. That's why I was just like, well, I get what you're saying. Definitely, while she was working in the White House, she probably wasn't making a coin. But Mama was a Hollywood producer. So,
How many suits? Like, she probably wasn't wearing suits that much in Hollywood. And at the time, she was unemployed when Toby came to get her. She had no job. She's
been unemployed.
She was probably spending that money on that nice ass house she had. And
2 hours.
Her, she's also taking care of her dad. And her dad is sick back home. And helping with her niece. Like, I just think, even if she had savings and she had money, is it worth it to tailor these clothes? Probably not.
Claudia
Outside Jean. Outside of your, like, ball gowns.
Claudia Jean was unemployed for, like, 2 seconds. But I hear you. I get your point. I just thought that was... We'll talk about that at a later point, because that is very interesting. There's also a note that she brings up at one point when fighting with the boys that she has a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, hold up. This entire time your character's had a PhD? Like, that show was so hilarious in so many ways, but I digress. So one of the things that I want to start off when we talk about fashion and politics, I think it's important to note that there are so many different eras in history, whether it be directly with elected officials or just in general. Some of my favorites, of course, the suffragette movement. Shout out to y'all when you see the white, the purple, and the green. Purple for dignity, white for loyalty, and green for hope. When they used to wear the sashes, when they would go out and march for our rights. Ladies, I know some of us made a different decision last November, but I won't stay there. Just want to highlight the white for loyalty piece. Loyalty to the female gender.
Constitution, whichever you care about more.
Hey, Black Panthers in the 70s, definitely another huge political fashion moment with the all black. Very much you've seen a lot of people use, a lot of black entertainers.
And the French beret.
Yes. I think a lot of people use, like, the beret and the all black. Beyonce did it during the Super Bowl in 2016. A lot of people have used all black to make a statement during other, like, Black Lives Matter and other political movements as it pertains to black people. The Black Panthers with their... Not only the black, but natural hair. A lot of people don't realize the Black Panthers, especially the women, were big on wearing their natural hair, like Angela Davis and other women. In the Black Panther movement, did not press their hair or add any chemical relaxer to their hair, because they were big about no wigs either. Because if you know anything about the 70s, that was also the disco movement. So a lot of the women were either pressing and blowing out their hair, adding a chemical relaxer to it, because chemical relaxers are just starting to come on the scene. Or they were wearing wigs, and they were really big about our hair should be honored and respected as it naturally grows out of our head. After the Black Panthers disassemble after the murder of Huey P. Newton, that you don't really see that anymore. Of course, the girls, they hit up that creamy crack, they find that lace front, and they keep it moving. You should wear your hair whichever way you want to wear it, but you wouldn't see a resurgence of like natural hair again until the 90s, when that new like back to Africa, when people started learning about the South African apartheid, again, that kind of nouveau, you know, like we got to find our roots. If your parents went to Howard during the 90s, like my parents, they were vegetarians. They did that whole situation. You saw that again. And then Jane Fonda, 1972, was one of my favorite political movements because she was just like, she bought her dress off the rack. When she won Best Actress in 1972, she was just like, why am I going to wear a fancy dress that's custom made when there are people dying over in the Vietnam War? So those are some other like really big political, historical moments in fashion. Oh, and we can't forget the pussy hats in 2017. Y'all did y'all big one with them hats.
Did they?
Y'all big one. Y'all was knitting the shit out of them. I never got one. And it made me sad because some actually were kind of lit. Some were made properly. But the girls who were crocheting and knitting before it was popular really did their big one on the hats. Some of them were not the best, but those are some of my like favorite political eras in history that I think we should just, I wanted to highlight as we begin this conversation, as we talk about what fashion and politics and how those two worlds start to collide. Those are like big eras that I think a lot of people do know about or know or don't know about. I don't think a lot of people actually know about Jane Fonda's like active activism. I'm sure they do know now, but in 1972, it was like a whole thing when she did not wear a custom bust down gown to the Oscars for winning back Best Actress, because that dress was like black. So, any favorite fashion moments for you outside of like the ones that I mentioned? MJ?
Yeah.
Any like favorite fashion moments for you, boo? Outside of the ones that I mentioned.
I think on the TV side, like hit the big ones. I think on the real life side, I think Michelle Obama had like a very particular fashion sense and was able to balance some of that with her time in the White House pretty well. I think other than that, there are definitely some legislators where there's like different little things I can pick up, like Big Gretch. I think with DC in particular, I wouldn't say it's hard per se, but it's a very specific bubble. And I think what I see happen with a lot of legislators or folks who are coming from the executive branch, that's like federal government side, websites all look the same. Like the photos they take all look the same. Like I'm just like, oh, you're just another one of them. So definitely feel like DC has a very specific like corporate NGO nonprofit culture that is wearing on ill-fitting shoulder padded suits.
Yeah, one of the things that I don't like about DC that I'm actually kind of jealous about New York is whether you're in corporate or you're working for a fashion house or you're working somewhere else, the girls are going to give you their own individual style. Like, I've always adored that about, like, New York, where the girls are like, style is style. Like, I might do it in a corporate way or I might do it in a, like, streetwear way, but I'm going to go into the space representing me. Whereas I feel, to your point, DC has, it's like carbon copies. If I see another one of y'all in some flats and a peacoat, I'm gonna scream. I'm like, whew, okay. But I think that as we, speaking of Big Gretch, one of the reasons why we wanted to do this episode, as we think about carbon copies, a lot of you are into the aesthetics, which I love a good aesthetic moment. Don't get me wrong. I like it when it's all cohesive and it looks good and it's pretty and it's color-coded. Many of you want to be in the trad wifey, Pilates girly, like 1950s, but it's 2025 trope.
Very, very weird.
Very, very weird, especially if you, some of you talk to your grandmothers and your great grandmothers. Many of them were not well. They were on lorazepam and a whole bunch of other things. Shout out to White Lotus. Where's my lorazepam? I do want to say that it seems as though we've gone through the mob wife aesthetic, which I feel like that died too soon. You guys didn't keep that going long enough, but hopefully it makes another comeback because that was very cute. Gen Z seemed very addicted to our clothes around the early 2000s and Y2K.
They love a low jean and that Y2K shit. I'm like, there's a reason we went high. No one's going back to low jeans.
No, I'm like, please. Anyway, but y'all, and I'm going to say this on behalf, I'm going to say this on behalf of sneakerheads everywhere. If you buy a pair of crisp white Air Force Ones, I'm talking to you heifers in high school and in college, that every time I look down at your feet, it
once
looks like
they
you
get dusty. Yeah, you have to a sneaker shop that'll buy dusty Air Force Ones and get a new pair.
Like, or you could do what we did because our parents weren't buying us new sneakers. You could keep them clean. Or you can take an old toothbrush, get you some soap and water, take those laces out, put them in the wash, sit your ass down, look at your favorite TV show, and get to scrubbing. Because I'm so tired of seeing. And you got creases all in the shoe. I'm be honest with you. I'm going to say this with as much Rainbow Coalition love as I can muster. This is what Black people mean when they say anytime our white counterparts get a hold of a trend, it don't come out the way it's supposed to. Your sneakers, your Air Forces aren't supposed to have creases in them. They're not supposed to have these deep, ridged, dank, crusty, like, no, they're supposed to be crispy white as you can get them before you need to buy a new pair. So stop. I really want y'all to stop. That's just the only rant I wanted to have because I see it and I want to yell at y'all in the street. Like, I know that y'all are just following your friends and you're young and it's a whole thing. So I don't want to be the old millennial boomer on the mic telling you what you can and cannot do. It just really hurts my soul because that was never the trend. Your white Air Forces are always supposed to stay white. So I digress. But back to this move. You all want to, a lot of the girlies, like I said, shout out to the working girlies. A lot of us post Dobbs, it seems that we have been making a trend more toward more conservative clothing, more modest clothing. And I think that you can attack this a couple of ways. I saw an interesting reel where a young lady really did talk about that the change that you see happening with like Pretty Little Thing, H&M, and other like maybe big box fast fashion brands, which you see from certain celebrities, is that one, when it comes to adopting urban Black streetwear culture, it is always just a trend and never a lifestyle choice for folks who don't live in Black and brown skin. Because a lot of you are moving away from the lip liner and the lip gloss.
We're realizing we have other features that are as beautiful and can be copied, but cannot be duplicated.
A lot of you are moving away from the nails. You're back to your short, work-appropriate nails. A lot of you aren't part of the click-clack society anymore. And that's fine. But it really does feel like if you are a history buff, it feels very reminiscent of Reagan, of the Reagan era, where you have the 80s was this big thing about wealth and the American dream in the modern era and attaining wealth. And women were expected to present themselves, if you were a woman of substance or perceived substance or wealth, or if you came from a certain class, you were expected to portray a certain aesthetic, which is this old money, clean, less makeup, cleaner finishes, those things. And now it seems to be back in style. And I have always had an affinity for preppy style. I think, one, my mother wasn't really big into me wearing urban clothes. So my style has always kind of trended towards like flats or heels or prep. But this is where we seem to go. And it is this, I think the more Americans seem to be on this path of like hustle culture and soft girl era and divine feminine, which are, I think, all have their own merit and positive attributes for men and for women. But there is this underlying socioeconomic push about the attaining of more money or of wealth or class in the division of the classes and being perceived as someone who is wealthy or being allowed into predominantly wealthy spaces. And it's very interesting to see because a lot of folks are leaning on certain celebrities to adhere to these trends. So you have one famous Nara Smith, who is definitely a symbol for the trad wife aesthetic, which I think is hilarious, y'all, because the trad wife aesthetic that you all assign Nara Smith to, I don't think that she promotes as much as you all assign into her. One, if you know anything about Nara Smith's story, is that she had, when she first started doing her content on Instagram, she had a really bad skin disease and she had rashes and she was breaking out and she was using steroids and creams and going to the doctor and nothing was working. So one of the things that she did to help her skin was change her diet. And in order to change her diet, she started to cook everything from scratch. So she doesn't eat any kind of processed foods. She only really eats things that are like made from scratch, made from whole foods. And a lot of you are just like, yes, she's such a homemaker. She's such a wife. That lady's wearing $40,000 like Christian Dior.
She's cooking for y'all in $3,500 fucking fur coats.
Like,
but y'all keep thinking that woman's homely. She's wearing a dress that was on the fashion on the runway 2 weeks ago. But okay.
She's the ultimate salesman and the ultimate brand and ambassador and influencer. So, one, the woman cooks whole processed food for herself and her family because she literally had a health issue, like a debilitating health issue. And then two, the outfits that she wears is to push to you all, so you all can spend money that you don't have on the clothes that you're wearing. And I like it. I mean, I love Nara Smith. I find her voice to be very soothing, and I've tried a couple of her recipes. They're actually very delicious.
Her TikTok voice.
Yes, because that's not her real voice.
The videos of her with other influencers where she's not doing that, completely different voice.
So I think it's important for you all to, for us, that if you are really into the old money aesthetic, you aspire to be wealthy, that's something, you just prefer your clothes to look that way, more power to you. I love to see the men dressing. I like a man in suits. So I like a man who dresses well. So the old money, the quote unquote old money, which is really the prep aesthetic, is, or the dandy aesthetic, like, I like to see it on men, but it's not new. Like, nothing is new under the sun. So I think that's important. And I think it's important for us to realize that, especially as young women or women who are coming of age, it is really important that you don't follow trends so much that you don't see the changing of the leaves around you and the messaging that is being pushed to young women. And that is my biggest fear. I think it's okay if you have a certain look, if you like Marilyn Monroe and you want your hair a certain way, or you like the 50s glam. If you want to lean into that and that really speaks to you, your style, your fashion, I'm all for it. But my problem is, I really do think that we are pushing this like ultra feminine, ultra soft as a way to make women docile in larger society, because we are in a post-Dobbs era. That yes, as like, yes, you should want to be a wife, you should want to be a mother, you should want to be a soft woman, because ultimately you belong in the home, and that's not what we're promoting. Like, that's, if, and I say that as someone, if you want to be a stay-at-home wife and you want to be a mother who is present in the home for her children during their elementary years, I think that's important, and I support your right to do that, and want to make sure that you have programs and resources in place for you to do that, for your family to be able to promote that lifestyle. But what I don't want us to do is to be so blind to some of the messaging that says wealth is the ultimate goal, which then crushes down on the middle class and the working class folks. And then also pushes women back on the rights that we have fought for so long and for so hard. And that is my biggest fear about what I'm seeing with some of the hypergamy and hyper feminine soft girl era stuff. Like, again, I do think that there are some bonuses and there's some positive messaging that I think all women can take from, you know, the school of the divine feminine and soft girl era. I think that there is some messaging that we all need to hear about, you know, how to take care of ourselves as women and young ladies. But I do think we're not seeing the forest through the trees. And that's my biggest concern.
I do think that there is a lot of propaganda that goes into a lot of the messaging that people are seeing. I think the example of Pretty Little Things and House of CB are two big ones, in that with Pretty Little Things and with House of CB, you had two brands that were for millennials and maybe like a little bit into Gen Z. Like, they had like kind of curtailed their marketing with the age group. And then over the past couple months, and then really over the past like the first quarter of 2025, they both had a rebrand, where with Pretty Little Things, like, the branding is different. Like the logo looks different. The website looks different. The clothing looks different. It's more modern. It's more modest. It just looks different. Versus with House of CB, you just saw them kind of like push out their older styles and bring in a style that literally a girl on TikTok described as slave couture. Like it was very Mississippi Cotton Express. Like it was just very, I was like, who's wearing this to go anywhere except for it to pick cotton? And the dresses are longer, they're a lot more conservative. And then I also think of Olivia Culpo's wedding last year, where she's doing the interviews in Vogue and she keeps like emphasizing, you know, like natural makeup and like covering up during the wedding because she wants to be like modest for her husband and like shit like that. Mind you, one of her reception dresses was very tiny. But when all these pieces came out and people started criticizing the wedding, her and her then husband were clapping back at people. And one, people were like, shouldn't the two of y'all be busy? Like, you're supposed to be on your honeymoon. Why are you clapping back at random people on the internet? But two, the way that they were both defending her and the wedding was very much giving MAGA vibes. And I do think that is, like, there is some crossover there for the, like, wealthier young MAGA people and this like move towards a more conservative fashion style that we're seeing from especially like our fast fashion brands, because by the time they pick up a trend, that means it already was on the runway and people started making it.
I think so. It's one of the things that I think is important, it is to is to note, in order to understand the present and the future, you have to kind of understand the past. And this is really important because when I say a bark back to the Reagan era, it's important to understand who the queen of what you all are trying to do did. And that is none other than the First Lady Nancy Reagan. I believe her actually her original name is like Anne, but
I don't know how you put her before Jackie O. But go wow,
because I'm specifically talking about the 80s, and I'm gonna get to Jackie O. But I'm gonna start with Nancy because after Jackie leaves the White House, the first ladies don't really lean into glam and glamour. They more lean into, because of the time, like you're in the middle of the
day. Did they have the option?
No. So because of the times, like because you're leaning into, because you had the Vietnam War going on, you have unrest across the country, you have protests, you have MLK died, you have Bobby Kennedy, murdered. I'm going to be very clear about what happened. MLK murdered, you have Bobby Kennedy murdered, you have a war that bleeds from JFK and then like all the way to Nixon. And then you have Jimmy who comes in and is this very like, I am a peanut farmer, very humble, very deep in, like his kids, his daughter famously went to H.D. Woodson in like Southeast D.C. Like this is a family that is very humble, very big on their like Southern Christian values, which is modesty, but modesty in the fact of we don't wear our money. Like that's not what God would have us to do. Like we are here.
Very to blue blood mentality.
Yes.
So like old school blue blood waspy money will wear an outfit that just looks like jeans and a t-shirt and then someone asks you, and the cost of those two things is like $8,000 or $9,000.
Not even, but Jimmy wasn't even that. It was just like, that's not who we are. Jimmy Carter was very much of like, the Carter family, from what I've researched and what I know, are just very, his approach to life was very humble. Like, I'm a servant of God. I'm here to do the Lord's work on behalf of the people. And he wasn't, and they weren't a family that felt like, yes, you might have some designer stuff, but it wasn't this like, I'm getting dressed in Christian Dior and we're coming out and giving the girls a show. You didn't have that, because that's not who they were, and that wasn't what the times were calling for. But after Jimmy loses his race for re-election, which I know some of y'all regretted, you have Ronald and Nancy come in, and Nancy comes in like a blaze of fire, honey. She's bringing glamour back. She said, "We've been out in the dark for too long." She brings back that spirit of Jackie O, so much so that the reason why the boys and girls in the Republican Party wear red today is because Nancy wore red on the campaign trail. That is just how effective she was with her fashion. Like, was constantly wearing red, was constantly wearing, like, notably wore like Christian Dior and Chanel, and she's bringing back all these like very upper crust, very blue blood, like just giving you Hollywood opulence. And you haven't seen this level of glamour since the Kennedys were in office. And this really, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say, I'm agreeing with you. Like, we haven't seen that level of opulence and style. Because I think it's not like Lady Bird or Nixon or Kennedy or Ford's wives. I don't know their names. Rose. But it's not like they were not matching their clothes, or they look crazy when they weren't in uniform or in like specific casual clothes for a queen's occasion. They were always wearing good stuff. I think, similar to what we said about Madam Secretary, they're wearing good stuff, but it's not the best for you. But then you see Nancy come in with her zodiac sign readers and her fortune tellers and all that shit, and she's like, not only am I shaking shit up, we gonna have a white Christmas here next year, whether it's the pasta or the fucking whipped cream.
Like, but not only that, like, she's wearing Yves Saint Laurent. Like, she has a definitive style. And it's important to note that the Reagans came into office in their, like, senior years. Like, she was 60 when they came into the White House. So not only was she doing fashion at such a high level that we hadn't seen in so long, and style that we hadn't seen since the early 60s, she was doing fashion for an age range of people that you wouldn't think would be into fashion. Because that's not usually how America sees older women. And she really made space for women, older women, more seasoned women, to be able to claim and own space in fashion in a way that you hadn't seen before. Like, Nancy Reagan was wearing diamonds and crystals again. Like, the girls weren't wearing diamonds and crystals again, like, during the Vietnam War. Like, this is how much she impacted. She was bringing brighter colors to, like, reds, pinks, emeralds, gold, those things. And I think one of the things that tells the world is, one, just because you become a senior, that doesn't mean you stop caring about how you look. She was very much, it's important to note that Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan came from California.
That's a baton.
Came from Hollywood. And she was a former dancer. So it would make sense that she would very much care about her appearance. And she would care about how she looked and being very keen about her sense of style. Where I think she, you know, Nancy Reagan is, I would say, quite definitively the defining figure of the 80s. She said a lot. It did a lot during that time. I even have my Nancy Reagan.
With a lot of first women. I think like a lot of first women. Nancy liked the glitz and glamour, right? Like she liked having Hollywood. How she liked that other side of it. Mm-hmm. And like brought Hollywood White House, liked having celebrities over. And I think that's what they got from being in California first, is that they're used to these people, like that part of it being part of the con and part of their political world. So that idea of like bringing them to the White House, like, oh, cool, great. But I think unlike a lot of other first ladies in the past, she also relished in the power shot as her husband's condition worsened. Right, like Woodrow Wilson had a stroke, and like the note in history on that is that yes, his wife and the chief of staff around the country, but they like swore everyone secrecy, right? You like don't hear about Caroline Kennedy politically in the months after he's gone. Like, I think Jackie, I'm not Caroline. But I think the role that she had of like get to be this powerful person in D, because the person that you're with doesn't have the power to stop you. She relished it in a way that other peel carriers did not have the strategic mindset or the call to want to try to do.
Oh yeah, no. I think I don't like to say fact because I know there are people who like to dispute against it in the Republican Party, but it is a well-known talking point that Nancy mm-hmm. Reagan practically ran the White House the last few years of Reagan's presidency because he had dementia and he was not with us and he was not a president as much criticism as the Republicans like to give Biden about his mental health and his mental capacity. You know, many were under the impression that Reagan was not with us at all the last 2 years of his presidency.
Especially in round two.
So, you know, but we'll leave that there. But, you know, Nancy Reagan is known as one of those first ladies who had presence, who had intellect, who was bold, who was forward-thinking. There is a famous photo of her that I believe she took maybe towards the end of their tenure in the White House, because she was a former dancer. She got up on the table and they took a photo of her, and where she has like, she's really, and of course Nancy Reagan is very petite and small, and so she's in this very like cute pirouette on the table, and that's like a famous photo of Nancy Reagan in the White House. And so it's those things. But I think when we think about what 2025 is, and it's important to think about what the 80s were. You had the height of HIV/AIDS. Nobody really knew what it was. People were trying to figure it out. And at that time, unfortunately, gay men were dropping dead like left and right, and it wiped out an entire community and a generation. one of the reasons why I think we don't have as much personal taste and style, because those people who would have been curators, those who would have defined the arts, died during that era in the 90s. So folks who were interested in Broadway, folks who were interested in being artists and in talent. Like, I just a quick side note. Gay men, black and brown specifically, and of course, and white, but gay men during the 80s were the carriers of culture. So writing, literature, style, dress, art, like the art you hang on your walls, like singing, dancing. The gay men who were lost and women, those people who died during that time in the 80s, a lot at the hands of the Reagan administration, because they quietly ignored the problem, specifically as it was happening in New York and other metropolitan cities across the country, were the carriers of culture. And it's probably why people insist on copying other people's aesthetic, because those would be our gay uncles are not here to properly show us what it is to have personal style, taste, and interest in the arts and culture. And I just hearken that back because right now it seems that we are in a time where health sciences is left to someone who seemingly has ideas, but then is undergirded with quasi conspiracy theory science. You have the head of our defense agency sharing not just classified material, but like top secret special clearance information via Signal. He must have not heard what happened during the Hogan administration. And so they were then texting on Signal about war plans.
Which is wild because they're not allowed to download Signal on their like federal phones. So not only were you texting on Signal about your fucking war plans, you're doing it from your personal cells, which are probably hacked by every major foreign adversary. And you're just making it so easy for them.
I don't know who's running the West Wing comms, but for you not to brief the head of state on a national leak that is now in the Atlantic. Shout out to the Atlantic and the subscribers that you have gotten over this. Yeah. Claudia Jean Craig would have never let Josiah Bartlett get in front of the press corps not knowing that there was a major security leak. I think there's a lot of parallels. And not even as a Democrat, just as a person who studies history and politics, there seems to be a lot of parallels between this era of the Trump administration and the Reagan era, which gives me pause because in hindsight, the Reagan era was quite bleak. You had the height of law and order. You had
20% of... what was it? Like 25%? Keep going. The sound come to me.
So you had the height of law and order. You had the height of HIV/AIDS epidemic. The war on drugs really got its kickoff in the 80s. Like, you had all this stuff happening, and we not only lost a generation of folks in the LGBTQIA+, my bad, y'all, letters are hard when you're sleepy, but y'all, you know, mother loves you. But you then begin to lose a generation of Black and brown husbands, brothers, uncles,
crack cocaine and coca.
And so drugs are rampant. And people are being jailed, are beginning to be jailed. And so the 80s were definitely a time to be alive, probably not, but definitely a time. And I see a lot of that unraveling now. Fentanyl is this very quiet but rampant thing. Like, it's only getting worse, and a lot of people aren't talking about how much fentanyl is affecting the American public. And I'll just take this point of privilege to say that if you are someone who consumes cannabis, please, please engage in the legal market, because a lot of what you're seeing, your cases of fentanyl, are folks who are lacing it in the dark market. I'm just telling you what the facts are, boo. I'm not, do what you want. If you got a plug you trust, then don't listen to what I'm saying. But I'm just saying that some of these boys and girls are lacing the drugs.
I think that when it comes to specifically cannabis, people should be cautious, but not fearful. Because I'm sorry, but I'll be damned if I've had a plug for 15 years at this point, who don't charge me no tax, who I ain't got to wait in no fucking line, none of that shit. And now I got to go to some fucking store that where they only got like 3-4 different strains. They don't know what kind of strain I like. They don't know what my work is. They don't know what I need. They don't know what I'm into. We don't know each other. This person hasn't been in my house. We're not buddy-buddy. And now I'm like, hey, I need something to take the edge off, you know, after a long day. And they're like, oh, take this indica. And I'm like, I don't like indica, because indica be putting me to sleep. I said, take the edge off, not take me off. I will not tell people that the off market is bad. What I will say is, like any substance that is mind altering or body chemical changing, people should be cautious, whether it's alcohol or even your Advil and your Aleve. And marijuana is, of course, no different. Follow your recommended
dose. I'm going to leave that there to those who actively partake. I'll just end it on this note. This is America. And for good or for bad, we have always been a country about individualism. There are some problems with that thought process. But when it comes to fashion and self-expression, we have always been top tier.
Proud to be American. And at least I know I'm free.
Oh my God.
And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly in my fancy shoes stand I still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. Cause I'm shopping in the USA.
I thank you, MJ, for that rendition.
I mean, the best rendition of that song is definitely the one that the guy did during the Olympics for U.S. men's basketball. But
I think that if you were into the old money aesthetic, the coquette, you want to be girly, you want to be hyper feminine, I love that for you. But make sure that you're doing it because it makes you happy.
and not because what's being pushed. Also, it's okay to eat. I see that the skinny movement is making its way back.
And cocaine skinny seems to be a trend again.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with being thin, especially if you're naturally slim, you're naturally skinny. Everybody is beautiful. It's important to be healthy. It's important to move your body at least 30 minutes a day.
Kate Moss diet where she was doing cigarettes, cocaine.
Crying. But yeah, some of you seem to be very interested in this other diet. So beware. I do want to highlight some folks that you all like are leaning into, but they're also doing it as a form of expression. Sophia Richie, you all like to quote her as using the old money aesthetic. Couple of things. Sophia Richie, before she gets with Scott Disick, is actually quite modest in her clothing in the sense of she's never been a super skimpy dresser. She usually was in a very like tomboyish kind of sense of style. You really don't see her dressing provocatively until she starts dating that wretched older man. He wasn't even an older man who was elevating her. He was just old.
I feel like we got to go from there right to Kim and he who must not be named.
I'm not going to address them as a couple at all because quite literally,
they are currently not a couple, but it would be a fabrication of history to not acknowledge the fact that the Kim K that people know and respect today, whether on the Met Gala red carpet, on the cover of Vogue, in fashion, is because of the person, the third person that she married and had children with, who opened those doors for her, changed
her style, was wretched,
literally walked through her closet and was like, throw this out, none of that, this dress is ugly, this.
I think he threw everything out that closet away.
The further away we get from everything, the further away we get from those years, especially because their reality TV show is now on a different network, and they're not showing that, while I do not like that man or anything he stands for, I think it is unfortunate that time will erase the fact that that was the effect he had on that family, because he really loved the whole family. The whole family started dressing right. And honestly, the clothing has started to skimp a little bit.
Oh, they don't hit. The clothes don't hit.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. Clothes don't hit no more. They all, yeah. Sabrina Carpenter, love her like 1950s coquette, Marilyn Monroe, like siren, showgirl situation, bombshell that she's giving us. Y'all, that is an extension of her, not her. I just want you all to know. And I thought we were all on the same page with Sabrina. Because she was emo like 2 years ago.
Like, we have no, I feel like so many celebrities who people think they know them because they listen to their music or they see their show or like they see them on social media. We have no idea what Sabrina Carpenter's actually like. Like, she did a lot of acting in her like youth and her teens, but we don't know that girl. This could all be cosplay to her.
Agreed. I love the music. I actually was like, I don't know what your fan base is called, girl, but I think I might be in it because I was listening to the music the other day and I love it. Is that what it's called? I like a good pop moment. I love a good girly pop moment, and she gives that. I love it. I love it.
Grammy performance. It was really cute.
And the old motherfucking G beat. Lana Del Rey, she is the mother of the vintage look in the pop industry. Mother giving you Veronica Lake bombshell curls, giving you, she is the best to do it, ever done it, with that sad ass, wealthy ass music.
I will never forget one of her first music videos she did was with A$AP Rocky. Yes. Where she played Jackie O and he played JFK, and they had mixed race kids. It was such a good movie.
Oh, that really set y'all on fire. I remember y'all weren't feeling that. Y'all were like, "Oop, okay." So good. But she also has said that the music that she makes and her aesthetic is very much satire because she's actually trying to prove a point about classism in America. Some of you have seemed to have forgotten that, but that's okay. I just wanted to uplift that again for the people that while we like to point to these people as heroes and the example for what we should and should not be doing, it's important to understand the foundation of which they are doing these things. And like MJ said, to also note that we may not know them. We don't know them. And we don't know what they do behind closed doors as much as we like to read the gossip blogs, yep, and things of that nature. These people are still people at the end of the day, and they have their own thoughts and reasonings for doing certain things. But again, be you. Eat healthy. Eat a well-balanced diet. Get your iron and your vitamin D. Take your 10K steps. You know, drink water. And be your own person, babe. You only have this one life to live. Why go out and be someone else? And I think because you all are choosing to do this, I'm really about to lean into my Carrie Bradshaw trope because y'all are all leading into this like other thing. So as someone who actually does wear a lot of black in muted tones, I'm gonna pull myself out of the rat race and go the other way. MJ, would you have any thoughts before we move on to our last segment for the evening?
No. I mean, I feel like new city, new wardrobe. So we'll see what things are looking like in a couple months, but no.
Okay. Well, take us home, babe.
Okay.
On this day in history.
This day in history. We're pretending we recorded this yesterday. Halle Berry becomes the first Black woman to win the Best Actress Oscar, which Shirley Ralph had a comment on the Best Actress Oscar at this year's Oscar after party, where she basically was like, because Anora won Best Actress. The actress who played the lead in Anora won the Best Actress Oscar. And she was just like, of course she did. Because if you want to win an Oscar, you basically got to play a horror slave. And at first, people were like, oh, that's harsh, blah, blah, blah. But then people started looking through the Best Actress winners. It is a lot of prostitutes and a lot of maids and slaves. So, she had a point. And then March 27th was actually when the day that March Madness, the NCAA, crowned its first champion in 1939, which was the University of Oregon over Ohio State. Wishing all of the schools in the tournament, the ones that are still there, the ones that have gone home, as well as the women's teams, wishing them all good luck. Gigi Watkins tore her ACL yesterday, resulting in a season-ending injury, which is tragic.
Close your mouth.
March Madness.
Something is in the air. Kyrie tore his ACL. Juju tore her ACL. People are really getting hurt out here. This is like the third professional ACL injury.
She's not a professional. She's a student athlete. But stay safe in these streets out here.
Yes. I mean, she might as well be. I wonder how much she make in NIL money anyway.
About $5 million a year. But the number, that's what people assume, because she does not release how much she's making.
And nor should she. Well, thank you all for joining us this evening. We managed to give you a full episode despite all...
Everybody tired.
All, the devil was busy this episode, y'all. He was throwing a lot. But yet, still I rise. Still I rise.
Devil has been working. I don't think my eyes have ever been so heavy. I had 2 Red Bulls during this episode, y'all, and I'm still ready to go to bed.
Well, babe, close us out.
Well, thank you all for listening to the Twice is Good podcast. Please like, review, subscribe, and share this podcast. It would mean so much to us. You can find this podcast on Instagram at Twice as Good Podcast, on Twitter at Twice as Good Pod, and you can check out our website at twiceasgoodpodcast.com. All opinions on this episode and on this show are our own. We are not paid for or affiliated with any political party or entity. But thank you so much for watching. Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.